Thank God it's Free Range. You are listening to Free Range Radio Friday with your host, Michael Elves. Pour yourself a beverage and turn up the volume, because here on 101.5 UMFM, the weekend starts now.
UMFM. This is Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. I'm Michael Elves, and kicking things off for us tonight, brand new single from Ghostly Kisses from the forthcoming album Darkroom. That was Crimson. Really can't wait to hear more. I mean, I always love stuff Ghostly Kisses does. Ever since I discovered them on SoundCloud, and I think they only had like two singles at that point, but really never a wrong step from that artist. I got a busy show for you tonight. In just a few minutes, we'll be talking to Lana Winterhalt about her new album, Recovering Theater Kid, out today, and which she will be celebrating with a release show April 6th at The Handsome Daughter. And then an interview with Moon River, or rather two-fourths of the band Moon River. They're in town next Friday to play a show at Darling Bar, brought to you by Real Love. And fingers crossed they're going to be recording a live session here while they are in town. We'll get into that in a little bit. But before we do, another local act just sent me their new single this week. This is Dinner Club with Galaxy Quest here on 101.5 UMFM.
Satellites go hunting with the weapon that I fashioned out of sticks. You say, who are we kidding? You know I can barely fish.
We're the nighttime fires that I started with some stones. Dead trees make up our shelter.
Well, out today and celebrating the release April 6th at The Handsome Daughter, Lana Winterhalt. Her new album is called Recovering Theater Kid, and she joins us on the show to talk about it. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
My pleasure. So, I mean, it seems tongue-in-cheek, but are you yourself a recovering theater kid?
I sure am. I am the most recovering theater kid I know. I grew up doing theater, and it's never left me. And I think all my family and friends would say that it's never left me.
So, like, did you do MTYP or things like that?
Yeah, I did a little bit of MTYP growing up. I was most involved in a community group called Fantasy Theater for Children, and we put on all these different plays. I think I was in my first one when I was 6 or 7. I played, I was in The Velveteen Rabbit. I played a little baby doll, and that was like the birthing of my dramatic self. So, and then, yeah, like all through high school plays and community plays and that sort of thing. So, yeah, it was with me for a lot of years.
Did you like purposely go into it, or was it something like your parents encouraged you to go into, like, because I ended up, you know, doing piano lessons because my parents were like, you got to pick something,
right? Yeah, I think it was like the closest thing. I chose to go into it. It was the closest thing to what I thought I wanted. Like I definitely now being an adult and looking back, I wanted to be a musician and I wanted to perform on stage. And at the time, that was just the only thing I could see is that leading me there. Like that option was like, oh, okay, like I should do theater. I like to sing. I can sing on stage in musicals. Yeah, I think my mom had to kind of like drag me to my first audition, but then after that, it was like, oh my gosh, I was obsessed.
You wanted to be on stage.
Yeah,
Yeah.
definitely.
So then, is there a point at which kind of the pivot to like your own songs, your own material, and having the stage to yourself rather than performing someone else's works in an ensemble?
Totally. I think that really was the biggest thing for me is I started kind of playing coffee houses or like open mics when I was probably around 16, and I realized that it was just such a different type of connection with the audience and probably what I was looking for and craving a lot more. And I really did feel that, yeah, like you said, like instead of performing someone else's works, like I had stuff within me that I wanted to get out and wanted people to hear. So that was definitely the main shift was like, okay, I want to try something different that's a little bit more like personal with the audience and personal connecting and connecting like based on who I am as a person. And I was never really afraid to like be vulnerable right off the hop. Like I was kind of like, yeah, I want to be a musician. I want to connect with people. I'm just gonna like lay it all out there. Even as a 16-year-old, talk about all my silly little breakup sad stories, sing them my sad songs. And but yeah, it was just kind of like unashamed, and that's kind of carried through into my adult life as well.
That vulnerability, can you get a sense of like why that was there from the beginning? Like, is that just kind of part of your personality that you're willing to be that vulnerable?
I think so. Like, I think it is, yeah, it's definitely part of my personality that I joke so much with the promotion of this album that I'm like a super dramatic person, but like I am, and not in the sense that like I over dramatize things. Well, sometimes I do. But I think I'm just very like an emotional person. Like I wear my emotions on my sleeve. Things just like come out. Lots of my friends joke that like they know exactly. Like you'll know exactly what I'm thinking because I said it before I even thought about it. Like things just come out and I'm a pretty emotional person. And so I think always music was a way for me to connect with that emotional side of myself. I felt that like, things that I couldn't necessarily say in real life, I could write out in music and I could share it so much more and more deeply through the songs that I was writing. So I just found it really, even from a young age, just really therapeutic and kind of a way to like get all of those emotions out on paper in one fell swoop.
The ideas coming out of your mouth before you've even fully like formed them, is that tied to your like song, is that the way you approach songwriting? Like you're processing things kind of in real time, or are you mulling things over as you write them?
No, definitely. And that's like such a great connection you just made. That's totally how I approach songwriting is like it really is a lot of the time just like a word vomit, brain vomit. Like a lot of the time I don't even go back over my lyrics and refine them or like change things to make them different. I kind of view it as like that's part of my process. Like whatever comes out is what's sort of meant to come out. So that's how I approach it. And I really, I completely understand that other songwriters, like it's super valuable for them to like go over multiple times or have other people critique it or whatever. But just the way that my process works, I always kind of just trust that whatever comes out the first time or, in the first little bit is what needs to come out and what is meant to be said. So I kind of just trust my gut on that one.
So that's the lyrics. As far as the music, then, are you writing like melody lines or things like that independent of the song of the lyrics, or like how do you kind of marry the two?
Yeah, it kind of depends. Like it's been an interesting shift for me in the last kind of 5 years, getting more deeply into music production myself and then producing this album myself. My process has really changed the way that I begin making a song. Like, I would say typically before, it was not uncommon for me to just like start singing a line or a little tune or something in the car. Like, that was where I wrote the most, was just like driving. I would just, something would come and I'd start singing it and singing the lyrics at the same time, whatever was coming out. But now that I'm producing, I start writing a lot more, right at the computer. Like, I'll start kind of, just either I'll have a line in my head that's something that is like lyrics that have been, kind of going over and over in my brain, or I'll just sit down and start playing the piano or start playing guitar. And I just record it right away. Like, I just record directly in, even in my songwriting process. So that's been really, that's really changed how I write the two together. And usually they flow together at the same time. Like, I'll start to sing out a line as I'm playing piano, and then I'll pause it and be like, okay, this could go this way really cool. And then I'll try that. And then I'll, just keep building it that way. So these days it happens kind of all at the same time.
That shift, is that a result like of a skill set that you didn't have before, or like a process that has opened this up to you because you're kind of more on top of the production side of things?
Yeah, totally. I say this to people all the time. Like, I think that learning music production is like, even if you don't want to produce your own music or produce for other people or whatever, like, it's been so transformative for me in my artistry and understanding how I make music. And it kind of feels like every new skill that I learn just kind of opens up. Actually, I describe it a lot as like an artist who, like a visual artist who paints, like a painter. The more skills that they learn with their paintbrushes, or the more different colors that they get, or the different techniques or the different mediums they can use, whatever, it kind of expands the way they can get the vision out of their brain and onto the canvas. And that's really how I picture and how I kind of approach music production, is that it feels like, even though it's kind of techie, like every plugin I buy or every, new skill I learn of how to EQ or compress something differently or whatever, every skill that I learn is just helping to get this vision that's in my brain out of my brain and into the, into the computer, so I can hear it. And it just kind of gives this more and more fuller picture of what I was envisioning in my head. So yeah, definitely the more I've learned, the more it's showed me what has even been inside my head.
So it's more a sense of like you always heard this in your head, you're just more capable of achieving it now, or has like your palette expanded in your head because you're like, I now know I can do these things.
I think it's both. Like, I think definitely it's been, these moments of like total joy when I've been like, oh man, dreaming of how a song might sound, and I just haven't been able to get it there in the past. And then when I finally can, it's like, oh my goodness, this is so exciting. So it's definitely on, that side. But on the other hand, I think I've been able to kind of, like you said, like my brain has expanded into like these other sonic worlds and universes that like it probably wasn't there before, or it just wasn't, wasn't tapped into before, or whatever. But I feel like it continues to kind of like evolve and build on itself. I'm kind of like discovering these sonic worlds in my head as I go, and as I learn these things too, and being like, oh cool, this was there, this is in there, and being able to like bring it to life is like magic. Like, honestly, I say all the time how obsessed I am with music production, and I talk to people about it all the time because I think it is just such a magical process. And being able to like, have that vision come out of your brain and also capture like a moment in time when you're sitting at your computer and creating something is just like so interesting.
Does working with other people as, like not your music inspire your music? Like, do you find that like someone has an idea to do something with their own stuff that you're like, oh, I didn't even consider that?
Yeah, I think I'm definitely these days more and more inspired by different people's types of songwriting lyrically. Like, as I said, I kind of have just always kind of trusted, like, oh, whatever comes out, whatever I word vomit out is like, something that I trust. But I think, yeah, the more I work and collaborate with other people, it is just so interesting to see how, different brains follow different trails. If they're, they have a lyric and they're following something and they're following a different trail, and it takes it somewhere that like my brain would have absolutely not gone. I find that really inspiring these days of like, just being willing. I mean, I still do the word vomit constantly, but it kind of allows me to feel a little bit more free to like follow other trails, like this person followed this trail and it came a lot more of like a folksy song. Like, how about I try and follow a trail like that and see where it goes? So yeah, just kind of like other people inspire me to take more risks and to try different things for sure.
So speaking of trails and paths, the lead up to this full length, you released like EPs, Act One and Act Two. How purposeful, like what thought did you give to like which songs were on which act and like how you kind of rolled this out?
Yeah, so I really wanted to try and do something different, and honestly, jury's still out if it's been successful or not. But I kind of felt like pretty trapped in the singles game for a while, like just putting out a single, putting out a single. And I know that's how so much of the industry and the world is working right now, and I get it, and the playlisting and the whatever. But for me, like I am a full length album consumer. Like I don't really listen to singles or like one-offs. Like I really listen, if someone puts out an album, like I listen front to back in one sitting. That's how I listen to music. And so I kind of felt like I wanted to find a way to kind of play the singles game a little bit of like putting out a little taste of something, but then still lead up to, I want people to listen to this in a full sitting, especially for those people who are album people. So that's kind of what I was thinking with this act one, this act two, try and release it in like some smaller bite-sized chunks that people can listen to. And, even if like they are 3 or 4 songs, but they've only been like 12 minutes and 8 minutes long runtime total. So that's totally digestible in one small little sitting or on a car ride or whatever. So that's kind of what I was thinking with the structure of it. And then as for the songs itself, I just listened to the songs like a million times and talked to my friends, the ones that I really trust with feedback. And yeah, they kind of just fell into place with what felt right, where they kind of sat, what should be on the first half, the second half, and yeah, then with the full length, there's four additional songs coming, or on it, I mean, four additional songs on it. So it's full. There's new songs, there's the old songs people have heard, and yeah, I hope that it just like really rounds it out, and people can who like to listen to a full album can really enjoy listening to the full album.
What do you see as kind of the through line to the record, like with the full album? Because you said, as a listener, you think of things kind of or consume them in that way. Like to me, and I mean, this is an outside person kind of like weighing in on your music, but there's like a wistfulness to some of the tunes that seems to kind of carry through.
Yeah, totally. I've been thinking about this a lot because I, so originally, like I've been working on this album for a couple of years now, and originally, the album was actually called Sweet Sorrow, which is one of the tracks that was on Act Two. The album was called Sweet Sorrow, and it kind of was trying to encompass these ideas of tragedy and joy, and I feel like I have all these different parts of my life and my personality that comes through my music, and I was finding it hard to kind of pinpoint myself in a genre like sad girl music or whatever, because I felt like, okay, it's not all sad, like it's not all whatever, like some of it's really joyful, or some of it's a bit funny, or some of it's a little dreamy, or even a little cheesy, like all these different aspects of it. And then Recovering Theater Kid, the song, was actually the last one that I wrote for this album, and it was like everything clicked into place. Like this is what it is for me. It's this It's this drama, it's, you know, the tragedy, the comedy, the all of these different things wrapped up in these songs. And I think kind of, yeah, the through line is as we were saying before, just this kind of like totally transparent vulnerability. I kind of think I'm think of it in my head as like I am standing on the stage, one spotlight on me, you know, every this stage is totally stripped down, like this is it, take it or leave it. These are the songs that I have, this is the music I have to offer, this is me, totally raw, you know, in the most dramatic essence of myself. So that's kind of how it came to be, and yeah, like I think that when people listen to it, they hear that vulnerability. And you know, for people who really like that kind of music, I think it really hits home. I think, you know, for other people, it's like, oh my gosh, like this is too eye-centered or like dramatic and whatever, a little bit too vulnerable for me. But I think for those folks who like who really like it or maybe are recovering theater kids themselves, it really can hit home.
So the album might be you standing on a stage, you know, solo spotlight, but the release show, you've got a clutch of people performing alongside you and supporting you. Maybe we can talk a little bit about the details for the show. As I mentioned, it's April 6th at the Handsome Daughter, but a litany of guests, let's say.
Yeah, totally. And so the real reason for that I'll share with you is that I am currently 8 months pregnant.
Congrats.
So I am like hilariously trying to get stuff out into the world before I have this baby, which is also the most dramatic thing I could possibly be doing. But I really, really wanted to like finish off this dream before I embark on the next chunk of life. And part of that was throwing a show. And I know that, you know, like literally everyone I talk to is like, are you insane? Like you are so pregnant. What are you doing? But I think there's a part of me that's like, you know, I want to kind of prove to myself that like this is a career that like women can do, even if they are mothers or pregnant or whatever. Like this is something I want to be sustainable for myself and something that I want to like continue pursuing because I love it and it really gives me life. But yeah, also being realistic that like I don't know how my energy levels will be on April 6th. And so I have all these amazing guests joining me so that it's still an entertaining show, even if I need to sit on a chair for part of it. So yeah, we have Isla Barker, Quiet, Nick Dyson, Hera, Veronica Blackhawk from Tinge, Ariel McCaffrey, Viff, and my very special guest, my mother, Betty Winterholt. So it's going to be a fun night. There's going to be, you know, kind of rotating acts on the stage. We're going to have some comedy. It's just going to be a great time together that we can just laugh and have fun and listen to the music and hear great music and yeah, appreciate the Winnipeg music community.
This show manages to kind of combine two truisms. One is the show must go on,
Yeah.
and it takes a village.
Absolutely.
So you're really tying it all together. Tickets are available now online. I'll link to it in the show notes for the episode. Before I let you go, though, Lana, I want to get you to pick a track off of the record that we can play for listeners. And if you have a reason why you're picking that song or an anecdote about it, love to hear that.
Absolutely, yeah. Maybe I'll choose a blockbuster. I really loved writing this song. It was something that you know, came up sort of again, like that word vomit. I was just chatting with my partner one day and I said, like, don't you think things would be easier if we just still had a blockbuster? Like if we could just like go to a blockbuster on a Friday night and like walk around, pick out a movie or a couple, and then just like that's your plans for the night or for the weekend or whatever. Like I that's one thing I do talk about a lot is, or you know, draw on these ideas of nostalgia and just like missing the good old days. But yeah, that song kind of just came out and it's kind of has this big anthem chorus at the end that says, do you think our love would be a little easier if we still had a blockbuster? I'm so tired of Netflix and chilling. I just want to watch a movie, rent a movie, and watch it over and over again. So, yeah, maybe that's something that people can listen to and be like, yeah, I also miss Blockbuster and miss those days, and yeah, feel a little nostalgic for it.
Yeah, they were just talking about, I guess, in Transcona, like the last kind of physical video store is closing down this week.
Oh,
And
another one
I was
bites the
feeling that
dust.
nostalgia too. So,
Yeah, absolutely.
all right. Well, congratulations on the release of Recovering Theater Kid. A reminder, folks can check you out April 6th at the Handsome Daughter for the album release show. Lana, thanks very much for taking some time and congratulations on the record and the child.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me.
Street to the Blockbuster. We can walk up and down the aisles forever. I'll pick you up at your place. Oh, I'm dying to see your face as I show the movies in the adult section. It used to be so simple. It used to be so simple. I wish it could just be simple. Both our eyes glued to the television screen, and occasionally each other. We'll take this tape back in a week after watching the same thing on repeat. And no matter how many times we see the same scenes over and over again, our bellies still hurt from laughter. It used to be so simple. It used to be so simple. I wish it could just.
Back here on Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio, right before the break, Blockbuster from Recovering Theater Kid. That's Lana Winterhalt's pick from her new record. My thanks to her for making some time. Coming up in just a few minutes, my interview with Moon River, who are playing next Friday night at Darling Bar. Before we get to that, though, Bobby Bazzini, new single called Maya. I heard this one played on Bandcamp Weekly this week, and yeah, just a nice slice of indie soul here. Keep it locked on 101.5 UMFM.
Mm-hmm. can run up if you want, if you need. I watch you from the sun. Clouds overhead, I get weak in the knees. Maybe we'll lose when we're out too far.
All right, well, coming to play March 29th alongside Secret Beach, Moon River. I've got two of the members of the band, and they're joining me on the show. Welcome.
Thank you.
Hey, man.
So I got to ask, is this named after the Henry Mancini song?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We think that's it's the most beautiful song ever written. It's all done on the white keys, so it's deceptively simple while being so intricate and beautiful at the same time. And there's also so many iconic images to us of that song, whether it's in Breakfast at Tiffany's or, I don't know, you take your pick. And so that meant so much to us. And it is a song that we were listening to a lot when we were making this record, this first record. So we just wanted to keep it with us, you know?
Were you
stole it?
So we stole it.
Sure. Were you organically listening to that song, or did you purpose like were you specifically looking for music that would influence the sound of this project? Like,
I mean, the answer to that is constantly always listening to music that us individually and collectively are to be inspired by where we're at in our lives. But this is a song I think I can speak for both of us when I say has been with us, you know, forever. It wasn't just now for this project. I have a guitar trio that doesn't really make its way out of Toronto too often, but, like, you know, that's a song that we've been playing for years, instrumentally. That's no mistake, man. It's just such a beautiful tune.
Yeah, but also, James and I, when we first started this project, before we even started it, we just made each other playlists, and that song and songs like that were on there. So yeah.
Is it like the vibe essentially, like the, like, because it's romantic but kind of almost wistful as a song to me, and like, is that what you were going for with the songs on the album? Because, like, that's kind of the vibe I get from volume one.
Well, I mean, I don't necessarily think we set out with that exactly as the North Star. Definitely played into the songs. And then, you know, we kind of finished the record actually before we found that name. Oh. And we tried a bunch of names that all were pretty terrible. And when we found that one, it just kind of fit, you know.
So, James, as I understand it, you invited Gavin up to your family farm, and that was kind of what spurred this project?
Yeah, that's right. That's right. It was you know, it was during some downtime during the beginning of 2021, and we both had a minute, and so we didn't really go in with an agenda. We just had a bit of space, and we had a bunch of tools that we all, like, looking back at it now, is very indicative of how we do a lot of things together. It's like, well, we took a tape machine and a drum machine and a bunch of really old guitars and stuff like that, and just started throwing ideas against the wall. And I think before we got any songs, we quickly realized that we felt pretty comfortable to make mistakes in front of each other, which was so helpful for us to be able to learn quickly how to be creative together. That's kind of what our take. I don't know if we got a couple of demos early on from that first couple of days, but it was more just, I think we both walked away from that being like, oh, this is something that's we're both getting a lot out of, you know.
Yeah, I think there's real potential that came out of that weekend.
Yeah.
And then it just kind of blossomed from there.
The willingness to make mistakes, like, is that something you talk about, or you just realize that's something you're doing?
Making mistakes. Well, I think
making mistakes all the time.
No, but I mean, you were alluding to, like, you know, having a willingness to make mistakes and try things out. Like, is that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a cornerstone, I think, of any artistic pursuit. Is like, you know, you hear other people talk about it. It's like the best thing that can happen is if someone has a better idea, you know, because that means that you have a better idea. And so it's not always that easy, though, like finding the right chemistry of people to feel that comfortable with. That wasn't something that we talked about going into, but I think after, you know, after a few times of us getting together and working on stuff together, we realized that was the recipe, was just like, hey, let's try this. And then we'd see it through, and music was either better for it or it wasn't, you know, and both were okay because we just wanted to keep on working on making it better.
So how does it go from the two of you to the four of you then?
Basically, James and I would got into the habit of working together like once a week, every Friday, it just happened to be. And eventually we reached a place where we're like, well, we're kind of at our max capacity for our capabilities of percussion and things. And our friend Lyle lives like half a block from here, so he started coming over. And then we thought it'd be fun to have a bass player. And so then Ben started coming over. And then we made time actually again to go back up to the farm and spend like a concentrated period of, I think, 3 or 4 days all together. Mm-hmm. And just collaborate that way.
What was neat about that environment, too, is that when we were getting these guys to come in, it wasn't like, well, let's cold call this musician that we admire, or, you know, find a Craigslist ad. It was like old pals of ours that we just, because of circumstance, we hadn't seen in a while anyways. So it was such a breath of fresh air to get them, Ben Whiteley and Lyle Molzan, to get them involved. And it just kind of, it came pretty naturally.
Gavin, you said you're at your, you know, capacity as two people in terms of percussion. So then it's like when you reach a wall creatively, like you need to enlist a new person to kind of achieve a vision?
No, not necessarily. I mean, those walls are, you kind of, you know, you live for those walls because that's when the most exciting stuff happens. And in this case, like the walls that we hit with percussion was like, there's a song, I think it's Blonde Hair Now, where it's like, well, what do we do for percussion? It's like, well, let's take an acoustic guitar and flip it upside down and bonk it with some stuff and, you know, and get some rhythm happening that way. And then there's other songs where you're just kind of playing your hands against your pant legs. And then there's other songs where it's like, well, this is more of like a Latin kind of feel. And Lyle is a bit of a, he's pretty special at that kind of music. And so in some cases it was hitting a wall, but in other ways it was also like, once we introduce his character to this, it's just going to take on a life of its own. And that was so, like, we're kind of like vampires for inspiration, you know, we're just like always looking for new and fun, exciting ways to explore that kind of creativity.
You're working on Fridays. Are you like setting goals when you work together? Or like, are you like, hey, let's write a song? Or like, is it much more kind of like, let's just see what happens in this time period and maybe we have something at the end of it and maybe we don't?
No, our goal was to have a finished song every Friday.
Okay.
And we would walk out of it pretty much there. And some days we'd come back and carve or add things. Usually it was take things away. But it was definitely a goal to try to finish something every week.
Some of the songs on the record, I think Only the Lonely, which is the last, Only the Lonely Know How, the last song on the record, that I think was the first session that we did here. And that was all done in one day. Just the two of us. And I think there's a, maybe Blonde Hair Now is another one.
Yeah. I can't remember the order. But
there's a few examples of, like, I'd say at least some of the songs were exactly that, of just the two of us spending a day. And then other songs, you know, part of the joy of this is being able to look at someone that you just put a bunch of work into something to and say, hey, this isn't good enough. We need to work harder. We need to find it. And in those cases, that's where, especially we brought in Lyle and Ben to really help develop those songs.
Yeah. I would also say on the flip side of that, sometimes it was about identifying like, wait, this is already done. You know, in the case of, I think it was Blonde Hair, we did try to redo that song with the band. And then we went back to the demo and was like, there's just something that's like this intangible magic to it. You know, like I can hear the crackling of a microphone that was broken. I didn't know it was broken yet, but it's just kind of added to the vibe.
Yeah.
Sequencing. I'm always curious about kind of how you achieve kind of the like flow of a record, especially when you're writing, you know, like once a week or something, and you're not necessarily thinking of these songs and how they relate to each other. How do you then decide what order they go in and how they're presented to the world in that respect?
I mean, to be totally honest, it's often trial and error, you know, because the record can take on a totally different identity depending on the sequencing of it. At least in my mind, you know, I'm still a sucker for listening to a record front to back as a piece of work, as a body of work. So in this case, it was kind of, you know, it was a conversation between the two of us and close friends that were invested and partners that were invested, are invested in the project, and hearing what they might have to say in that regard. But yeah, trial and error, I would say.
So ultimately then, do you see a through line or like a narrative to these songs in the way that you've sequenced them?
Lyrically, you mean?
Like in any way, do you see kind of like a, is it a forward arrow?
Kind of curating an emotional journey. I wouldn't say like, it's not like the songs were written lyrically to have like a through line in the themes, you know, but definitely it's hard with any kind of art to say like, why does this piece work next to this piece? But then you put them together and it just does, you know, and that some of the magic lies in between the lines.
Speaking of lyrics, did you write the lyrics in concert, like, together, or like Gavin, do you go away and write lyrics after you guys have created a song, or what's the process like that way?
Every song was kind of different. Some of the songs I had the bulk of the lyrics for and brought them in, and then we kind of like pretty much stripped it back to the vocal melody and revamped the chords and structure. I mean, we were both pretty ruthless with the razor blade, so to speak. We're just editing the song shorter and shorter, which is great. You know, it's like get in, say what you want to say and get out, both musically and lyrically. And then there was a few examples on the record, or at least one where James had like all of the music done and I just wrote a vocal part to it. And then we kind of edited the music to fit that. Because like you were saying, we're just kind of chasing inspiration and whatever sort of inspires us to develop a new process is exciting.
Yeah, I think something that helped us. This helped us a lot along the way is that we're pretty quick to come to a consensus when we think something is done. You know, we're very quick to know when it's not done, but we also, you know, when we have it. And so,
and that sometimes is the hardest part, honestly, in the process, is to say, "Hey, this is done." You know,
yeah.
And I mean, it's one of my favorite parts. It's sometimes you labor over it, and sometimes you just know.
Yeah, yeah.
Does that apply to other music you make, or was it specific to this project that you had like a good sense of like what a completed song was?
I think it, for me, it applies to all the projects that I work on. And it's something that you kind of develop over time. You know, I've definitely made records in the past where, boy, it was probably done 5 months ago and we could have done without a lot of things, you know, but that only comes with experience and doing it again.
That doesn't really apply to me so much. I'm always two things further ahead than whatever I'm trying to complete at the moment, which could be problematic. So that's one of the things I've enjoyed in this band is the strong constitution to finish things, to complete it and really see it through. We've been good with kind of making plans and keeping them.
So like looking past the thing you're supposed to be working on to the next couple of things.
Yeah. That's exactly right. I get excited pretty quickly about stuff, and I love writing. I'm always writing music and always trying to figure out where I can play it and who I can play it with. And that's really exciting, but that can leave a lot of loose ends if you're not careful, you know? So one of the things that's been really exciting about this is really making the point to complete it and see it through. And that's been super satisfying.
Well, on the topic of like looking past things, like, is that why you named it Volume 1, with the sense that there are going to be more?
Yeah. I mean, even in the show that we're going to be doing in Winnipeg, I think probably half the songs aren't on, or at least five or six of them are not on this record. They're songs that we're getting ready for future recordings.
And it's so Victory Pool is the label you guys came out on. Was this like an intentional thing, like you approached them or they approached you, or how did that come about?
I mean, they're Jesse, who we're working with at Victory Pool, was kind of floating around our orbit and other projects, and you know, we had meetings with a few people and we kind of clicked. And so we're kind of at a similar stage in our careers where we've all done projects in the past and we're all quite hungry still, so it's quite symbiotic in that way.
And speaking of symbiotic, Secret Beach opening for you also on Victory Pool.
No accident there.
No accident there. So is it the full four piece that's coming to the NAF?
We're going to have four people, but it's just James and I flying out. We're actually hiring two people from Winnipeg to play with us.
Is that how do you go about finding folks to kind of fill in for
well,
Lyle and Ben?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I have a lot of minds of it right now, but I love Pam, Lyle, and Ben. Those guys are also in quite high demand. And part of our objective with the band, and like the band is also, James and I are also a production team when we're producing records together. And part of the idea behind touring was like meeting new musicians, experiencing new creative processes, tapping into creative communities outside of Toronto. And so this seemed like a really easy way to do that.
We ended up calling a couple of ringers. John Barron and Roman Clark are going to be joining us, who are pretty special musicians in their own right. So we're really looking forward to collaborating with them.
Does your production work impact the music you make? Like, do you find that working with other folks and listening to their work influences the stuff that you end up making?
Inevitably.
Yeah, because we learn so much in the process of making other records. You know, I think every time we make anything, we're learning. So it all definitely kind of funnels back into, well, everything touches everything, I guess you'd say.
Yeah.
Sure enough. Well, before I let you go, I always ask the artist to pick a song off the record that we can play and provide a reason or an anecdote. Since there's two of you, if you each want to pick a track, or if there's something that you agree on, regardless, we can make room for both.
It's fun.
Yeah, let's pick two songs. Okay. I'm gonna pick The Hypnotist, because I love the very speed on that one. It's like the sound of tape being very sped to me. I don't know. It feels nostalgic for like a time that never existed in a way. And I'd love to hear that.
I was gonna pick The Hypnotist, but mainly because when we've started playing it live recently, I've been playing ukulele on it, and that is just brought me endless amounts of joy trying to figure out how to play that.
So I guess we did agree on one.
But I'll pick another tune, but we did agree. Okay, I'm going to say, I'm going to pick one tune called Let the World Turn. I'm going to pick it because in the recording process, we had the bulk of the song together, and it's a song that really stood out to me. We were working with a saxophone player that was having some trouble tuning, and it was one of those spur of the moment opportunities where it just seemed like that was the direction the song needed to go. So the job for Gavin and I quickly became, how do we really encourage this saxophone player to play this out of tune saxophone as loud as he can? and so we managed to capture it in this really like kind of feverish moment. And then once we had that, we knew we needed something else to match the sound of that to give it a home. And so we quickly called our pal Lyle, who came over and overdubbed some percussion along with it. So when you hear the beginning of that song, it's captured, to me, that captures a really special moment on the record of in that case, a saxophone player who we don't have a whole lot of history with, but we knew in that moment what would be really fun to create together. And that's what that sounds like to me.
All right.
Well. And that song also name drops Manitoba. So there you go.
Boom. There you go. Well, looking forward to seeing you here March 29th. In the meantime, safe travels, and thanks for joining us on the show, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Thanks, Mike.
I'd give you my heart, now without it I'd drop it in the spot. Leave you all alone to care for the dark. But I'm sure she chooses you. I remember moving high, flying high above the world, feeling fine. But jealous hearts can lead to tears in spite. I guess I never knew. That if my heart was not enough, we might have to call it off. Take my hands, my fingers too. May they be some use to you. And now I know you've been untrue. When Van Gogh first learned the news, he said this time we'll go too far. English is still your heart. I swear it's sad, but not mind. I left my body and went walking. I guess I never knew. I guess I never knew. I guess I never knew. And I do want you to know that I still care.
shoes and low in the street smoking night and day. Carrying letters from your brother in the army. If a new world can be bounced on its way. With the sun forever dances on your face, where the windows can be loud, but you got to carry on. It's life's a loud joke, but that's okay.
Back here on Thank God It's Free Range, the Friday edition of Free Range Radio. Right before the break, Moon River. My thanks to Gavin and James from the band for the interview. You heard The Hypnotist and Let the World Turn, their two picks from Volume 1. Playing Darling Bar next Friday. Don't forget that is Good Friday. On Bad Thursday, they are planning to stop by the station to record a session, which we will hopefully have to air on that Friday night and to post on the line. So keep your eyes peeled for umfm.com for that. Going to kind of gradually pick up the pace here as we hand things over to After Eight Radio. Got a new R&B jazz outfit out of Toronto called Mood Set, who sent me their album Let's Talk earlier this week. Going to play my favorite track from that called Rain. Japanese R&B singer Ree Morris. We've got Muneer Griffin, beatmaker and rapper who sent me a clutch of releases that he has put out from Moo Beats Volume 1. I'm going to play you my favorite track, Sunroof. We've got a new single from the Jazz Defenders. And then last week I played you a Victor Davies single. Well, got another Victor Davies track in my inbox this week. I was talking about how he's done some stuff on Compost Records. One of my favorite acts on that label, Kyoto Jazz Massive, are the headliners on the track Deep in Your Mind. We'll play that, and if we can squeeze in one or two more, we'll do that before we hand things over to Kai. Keep it locked here on 101.5 UMFM.
Oh, want you close your eyes. Listen to my pounding heart in this sweet darkness. I will try your pouring tears. Touch my lips. Make you want this dream.
Please.